greetings, salutations, and any other type of words that you use to say hello to people. You have stumbled upon the Daily Gopher Football Podcast. You are hearing the voice of J.D. Mill because our very own Jeffrick, unfortunately, was not able to join us this week. So I'm going to try to stumble through getting us to talk about last week against New Hampshire and the week ahead against Western Michigan. Thankfully, I am joined by the newest writer over at the Daily Gopher. He goes by Go AU Fur, which we clarified last week is for Gold in Gopher. But his real name is Chris. Chris, is it okay if I call you Chris, or do I have to stumble through your screen name the whole time?
Let's go with Chris, because I never intended for that to be, you know, spoken out loud, I don't think.
Okay, perfect. So I think I made the joke last week about it sort of being like the symbol that Prince went by for a couple of years. We'll just go ahead and call you Chris, but the symbol for Chris will actually be that Go AU Fur thing. Does that work for you?
Works for me.
All right, cool. All right, so we're coming off of a week where the Gophers actually did what they were supposed to do, unlike against UNLV where they kind of struggled to get through the game and took three overtimes to finally overcome the don't call them running Rebels. Against the FCS New Hampshire Wildcats, the Gophers actually did what they were supposed to do. They came out, they scored early. They did end up giving up a touchdown pretty early, but then really put the clamps down and did what they needed to do the rest of the game and won handily. So just give me some thoughts on what you felt about the Gophers throughout that game and how you feel now that we're 2-0.
Well, you know, it was nice to see right off the bat. I mean, not right off the bat. On the first scoring drive, when Gray, I mean, if I recall it, it was pretty much when you first started passing. You know, it was right on the money. You know, there was no throwing high. It was clear that, you know, at least for that first pass, if he was settled in and he wasn't going to be all nervous. And then that continued, which was really nice. So that was the first thing I've been looking for. And obviously just, you know, the defense played well. I don't know that we totally saw what that New Hampshire team was all about because we knocked their starting quarterback out so early. But at the same time, you know, you saw good pressure. You saw defensive linemen creating push. When one would get into the backfield, that would open up space for the other to finish off the sack. You know, the coverage downfield was good. It just, I don't know, it was a lot of fun, honestly. I watched it at a buddy's house, and it's the first game I can recall in a long time where by the second half you're paying attention, but at the same time you're kind of joking around and just enjoying yourself because, I mean, the game was in hand. That there was nothing to worry about by the time the third quarter rolled around.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually I sent my uncle a text message. I think it was in the third quarter, maybe around halftime, and the only thing I said was, this is fun. And I don't think it's been, you know, it's been a long time since I would feel like I could have sent him a text message like that. He was at the game and watches absolutely every Gopher game. So yeah, that was definitely a good thing. You mentioned the pass rush, and I think that's something that through the first two games is really probably the one thing that has stood out above everything else that, you know, I don't want to say it's a complete surprise because I think we knew coming into the season that this was going to be a team that had a better pass rush than the last few years. But I really think so far it's exceeded our expectations. I think on Saturday I mentioned on Twitter that, you know, really every time New Hampshire's quarterback was going back to pass, he was getting hit. And I think we saw that in the UNLV game as well. A lot of hurries, a lot of knockdowns. Give me some thoughts on the pass rush from your standpoint. Obviously, you know, a couple of guys have stood out as we've been through two games here, but really seems to be the theme of what this team can do from a defensive standpoint is as long as we can start to be disruptive in the backfield, we've got a chance to do some things. Talk a little bit about your thoughts on that.
I think it's really important. I mean, Trace Clayes has shown that he's not afraid to blitz, obviously. But he's also said from day one, as far as I can recall, that he'd prefer to really not have to do that, to use it only as a special deal where you're doing it to try to create and force a turnover rather than as the primary means of a pass rush. So I think if the defensive line can sustain that kind of pressure, that's going to be really important as the season goes on. It takes the pressure off the secondary a little bit. You're not bringing corners on the blitz. It frees up the linebackers to do their thing. And, keeping with the fun theme, it's just a lot of fun to watch because Rashid is he's just huge. And when he gets in there and tears a guy down, the UNLV quarterback or running back that he took down with one arm. It's just a lot of fun to watch. And, Will Hyde, it's nice to see him get back to the kind of form he had when he was a freshman. And the young guys, too. I mean, you're seeing some of, I can never pronounce his name, Amafula. Yep. I can never pronounce the kid's name.
That'll work.
You're seeing some of the young kids step in, and it's just good. It's just good to see.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun, and that you mentioned the tackle by Hageman, and I think you're right. I think it was on a UNLV running back, or whether it was a quarterback doesn't matter. The thing that was so funny about that tackle was he took him down, and I think everybody who was watching that thought, oh, he's going to get called for a penalty. It had to have been a horse collar. The reality is, it wasn't a horse collar. He just brought him down so violently that I think we all just thought it should have been a penalty. So that was absolutely a thing of beauty and obviously something we hope to see a lot more this year.
I think my one thought would be is the pass rush is obviously been going well. They're not seemingly doing quite as good of a job with run stopping. The running backs are often getting to that next level. I recall Kill saying that was kind of a problem for Hageman, was that, you could turn him loose and he'd go after the quarterback, but he wasn't always so great in the run defense. So it'd be interesting to see if they can keep, moving that up. But, that's a really minor complaint because it's not like the two teams we faced have necessarily completely gashed us in the running game either. So.
Well, and I don't necessarily agree that it's a minor complaint because I think that if a team like UNLV and a team like New Hampshire have been able to do that to us with seemingly much smaller lines than we're going to face against Big Ten teams, I think it's a concern. So hopefully there's some adjustments that are being made to take care of that because, I even remember the Gophers a couple years ago when NIU came in, and I think the running back was Span for NIU, and they just gashed us up the middle all day long. And that's something that obviously needs to be, we've got these guys, like you said, that can be turned loose and get after the quarterback, but do they have the ability, do they have the discipline to hold their gaps in the run game? That's something that we certainly need to be able to see some improvement in coming up. Okay, so let's talk then. Let's move over to the offensive side of the ball. You mentioned, absolutely right, Marquise Gray. The Gophers were not able to throw the ball on their first possession against New Hampshire. Gray did have one, Gray was sacked on that drive, but otherwise they ran the ball every time, had a couple of penalties. Looked like things were going to come out same old, as they had been against UNLV the week before. Second drive, Gophers come out, and Gray, on his very first pass, 27-yard touchdown to Isaac Frickey, the Caledonia Clipper, wide open. Gray hits him perfectly in stride for the touchdown. And right away on his first pass attempt, we get to see him improve over what he had been against UNLV. What were your thoughts after he threw that pass? Was it just everything that happened last week was over, or we still have more to see? What were your thoughts on that?
It was a combination of just laughing really hard that it was that wide open and relief that he didn't overthrow the guy. That's what he did all throughout the SLT game. Honestly, you know, I wanted to see a little more, but at the same time, once I saw him connect on that, it kind of, I was pretty much okay. Everything that came out of fall camp, and the nice thing about go for fall camp is because Kill keeps it so open, the reports you're getting, you know, are actually reports of what is happening, not like 10 minutes of practice that the press saw.
Right.
And all the reports coming out of practice were Gray's motions improved, his accuracy is improved, his decision-making is improved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just story after story and blurb after blurb from all the outlets in the Twin Cities saying, hey, he's not a great passer, but he's got it together. He's clearly going to be better than the year before. And
right.
So it always seemed to me that UNLV was much more likely to be an aberration. And it was just nice to mm-hmm. see, you know, with that first pass and then with the subsequent play, albeit, you know, only on 8 passes throughout the New Hampshire game, to feel like, you know, I don't know, I'm still on the set of things where, yeah, there's plenty more to play, but I'm of the mindset that UNLV was an aberration. And it's much more likely that he will play closer to New Hampshire than to UNLV moving forward.
Right. I obviously hope that you're right, that UNLV was an aberration. My concern, and, you know, tell me what you think of this, but my concern is, what if Gray is a guy that needs to get a fast start, and if he can't get a fast start, it takes him, like it did against UNLV, 3.5 quarters to really overcome that. You know, is he a guy that just needs to get confidence right off the bat, or is he a guy that can fight through that?
That's actually a really good question. I don't know that I have an answer for that one. And I think that's an especially good point, given the fact that, you know, he's going to get hurried and hit and just harassed a lot more as we get into the Big Ten season. Yeah, and, you know, as happy as I am with how he played, and as much as that fits into what I feel is his improvement and kind of the overall theme that I think is more accurate about him, I don't think that necessarily precludes problems if he's getting hit. So, honestly, I don't know. I'm hoping that what we saw at UNLV was just nerves, not a slow starter issue. But, you know, I don't know that we'll know until that first game when he plays some better competition and, you know, his first 2 drives, he's just getting popped in the mouth a couple times.
Right.
And then what is he going to do?
Right. And, you know, I voiced last week on the podcast a slight concern of, you know, what if Gray is just a really good athlete and he's not a great quarterback? And, you know, obviously I just voiced a concern of what if this is a guy who needs to get a quick start, otherwise he can't get over the hump. Let's be clear about something here. In no way do I think that there's a quarterback controversy. Max Shortell played very well in the fourth quarter against New Hampshire. Incredibly accurate, to the point that it almost made me sick to my stomach that we couldn't give some of that to Marquise because Max is so poised back there and so accurate. But I think a lot of that has to do with the situation that he was coming into. The game was clearly in hand. Absolutely no quarterback controversy from my standpoint. I'm going to ask you the question. Do you think that there's a quarterback controversy?
No. There's no QB gaze. No QB gaze 2012.
Good.
No, there isn't. I take away from Shortell's performance, hey, we've got a backup who looks like he can get it done, and it, you know, makes you kind of hopeful for the future. I don't see it as a situation where there's any sort of controversy, because Gray just does too much with his legs for you to take him out.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, good. Glad we've settled that. So the last question I want to ask about New Hampshire is, was there any area of the game where you didn't feel like the Gophers improved over the previous week against UNLV? We've already talked about Marquise. Obviously, he played a much better game. The pass rush, you know, probably was a wash, as good against New Hampshire as it was against UNLV. you know, we haven't talked about the punting game, but the punt game, I can't believe we have to talk about the punt game, but the punt game did get better. Were there any areas that you didn't think improved or maybe even regressed against New Hampshire as compared to UNLV?
You know, I'd have to say I don't. It's more areas that didn't stand out to me. I don't typically do a great job of following linebacker play, but nothing about what the linebackers were doing against New Hampshire jumped out at me. I remember noticing quite a few times when the secondary corners or safeties were coming up and making plays in the run game. I don't recall seeing a lot of that, anything that stood out to me from the linebackers. And you know, that could very well just be an oversight on my part. I think the offensive line play got better, but at the same time still had some areas. I think the way Kill described it, and he wasn't speaking only about the offensive line, but I can feel like I can think of some times during the game where this seemed true, where there was always one guy who wasn't quite 100% in sync with everybody else. And at UNLV, that manifested itself a lot of times with, you know, really costly penalties. That wasn't so much of a problem against New Hampshire, but it just never, there were just plenty of times where it felt like, okay, they're not getting quite as good of a push as they could on the run game, or, you know, you just, I don't know, there were just times where it felt like the offensive line wasn't quite gelled. And that's concerning, but I mean, they're not horrible, and they've got time to get better, and they've got time to gel, and they've got time against some teams that I don't recall having especially fearsome front fours from what I was reading. So, you know, some decent defenses, but not the kind that are going to rip up an offensive line. So I think those are the two areas. Everybody else, you know, either the same or continued at what was exciting at a higher level.
Right. I will say I was a little bit disappointed in the run game. I felt like outside of Marquise, actually, who clearly set the pace from a run standpoint, but I felt like Kirkwood should have been able to get going a little bit more. You know, after the game, I think I saw some comments from Kill where he said that maybe the running backs didn't do quite as good of a job of picking up some of the blocks. So I don't know that I'm prepared to say that the run game really regressed. You know, we did rush for over 200 yards again for the second week in a row. And obviously you would expect that based on the margin of victory. But I would say that's really the one area where I wasn't as comfortable with the improvement from week one to week two as I was with some areas of the team.
I'd agree, especially when you take out, I mean, you take away that 75-yard run from Gray, and suddenly that 230 or 40 on the ground is 170, and, you know, it was not a bad performance. It just wasn't quite as explosive or memorable as you would hope for a game that was bad in hand.
Welcome back to the Daily Gopher Football Podcast. Now is the time in the week in the podcast where we're joined by a rival blogger. And this week we are joined by Brandon Fitzsimmons. Brandon is joining us from Kalamazoo. Is that correct, Brandon?
Suburb of Kalamazoo, but close enough.
Okay, good deal, good deal. And you write for a couple of different blogs. Why don't you tell us the names of the blogs and kind of what your position is or what you focus on over there?
Well, first, I write for Hustlebutt, which is the SB Nation Mac blog. For them, I write primarily football, some basketball coverage for Western Michigan. And then I also do all the hockey coverage for them, since it's technically a non-MAC sport and nobody else wants to touch it. Hockey's my specialty. But I also have my own Western Michigan-only blog that's called Settle Up, Fight On. It's ran by me and a guy named Brian Persky. Unfortunately, he's taking a little bit of a sabbatical to focus on a couple things. While I'm just getting into the grind of school and all that such things, the content is just kind of falling off, but we've been trying to keep it up. But
Good. Well, we know you guys. Sure, we know you guys do some good work over there at Hustle Belt. We appreciate you joining us. Your Western Michigan Broncos travel to the Twin Cities this weekend to take on our Gophers. And Western Michigan is 1-1 coming into TCF Bank Stadium with a loss to fellow Big Ten foe Illinois, and then a win last week over Eastern Illinois. So I'll be honest with you, I've not seen either game, seen a little bit of highlights, mostly just looked at stat sheets. And to tell you the truth, outside of the fact that Alex Carter can put up some big numbers, I have no idea what to make of this team. So give us a little bit of breakdown as far as what these first two games, a loss by 2.5 touchdowns to Illinois and a big win by 31 points over Eastern Illinois. What do those games tell us or tell you about Western Michigan?
I feel like we should just look at each game individually because it really is a tale of two games. In the first game, the defense actually performed pretty well. They gave up 10 points early on in the first quarter. But then after that, they only gave up 7 points. They really hung with Illinois. And they only had two bad drives. One ended up being an interception in the end zone. The other one ended up being an Illinois touchdown. But offensively, it just came out as a shocker. The offense was highly touted, expected to perform. Alex Carter is a senior. He has a stable of running backs. He has a stable of tight ends. New wide receivers, but he had two experienced wide receivers in Josh Schaefer, who forced 2 fumbles in the Little Caesars Pizza Bowl last season. And then Eric Monette, a senior, 5th year. He had the most receptions coming into the year. Monette ended up with 3 catches, 2 drops, and a fumble. One of the drops being wide open in the middle of the field. And Schaefer, I think, only had 2 catches and a drop himself. So the offense just really underperformed. Carter threw 3 picks, 1 being a pick 6 that ended the game. And that the offense was just the story of the game for Western fans. The poor performance just shocked every Bronco fan. And then you turn to the next game. The defense again comes out, gives up 14 points in the first quarter, but then basically does nothing or gives Eastern Illinois nothing in the second, third, and fourth quarters. They gave up 1 touchdown after a muff punt, put the ball at the 5-yard line in the third quarter. Outside of that, defense made adjustments, and they look stellar. Offensively, they were great. I mean, Carter lit the EIU defense up. He had 299 yards and 5 touchdowns in the first half alone. And it was just an offensive showing. Jamie Wilson came out, had the most receiving yards as a freshman since 1997 when Steve Neal did it. And it was just a great game to watch if you were a Bronco fan, knowing that the offense would look back on track. Monette didn't play that much. Schaefer didn't play that much. So it was the new wideouts, the tight ends, they really came up huge for the Bronco offense.
So tale of two very different games. Obviously the offense, put up a lot of points, a lot of yards, a lot of big numbers against Eastern Illinois. But struggled a little bit against the defense of Illinois that we don't know if those guys are good or bad based on the 2 performances that we've seen from them. Based on what you know about this team coming into the season and based on what you've seen in these first 2 games, what do you think that we can expect against the Gophers this Saturday?
Well, I'm going to look at the Eastern Illinois game where the freshmen and tight ends really stepped up at wideout. I know Eric Monette will not be in the game this week, so there's wideout gone again. Last week he played a limited role. I don't think he'll play a role at all this weekend. you'll see the freshman step up. Jamie Wilson has really solidified himself as the next possession receiver. Last year, Jordan White was that guy. He had 140 receptions, was the first consensus All-American in program history, and he was Alex Carter's outman. Well, Jamie Wilson looks like he's taken over that spot and really been the wide receiver that if we need a play, Carter can go to him. Outside of that, Justin Collins has a lot of big play potential. Blake Hammond, he can be a big body to guard, and it just really looks like the Bronco offense might be back to where they were. Maybe just some offensive jitters in the first game against Illinois. I know that the Illinois front four, they really blitzed the Bronco line and Alex Carter, and they forced mistakes. And it was just a nightmare, especially with a young receiving corps. Well, enter an easier week, time to get the receivers down. And it really looks like the Broncos have found themselves on offense, and that's not good news for anyone that the Broncos play. Now, this will be a good test against a Minnesota team that they aren't as great as they were in the past, but they're doing better than they were last season. So it'll definitely test the Broncos to see if they truly have found their offense or if it was just a poor Eastern Illinois defense.
Yeah, and I think, too, that's kind of the story of both of these teams coming into each of their third games is, you know, where Western Michigan didn't necessarily play well against Illinois and actually lost that game, Minnesota found a way to beat UNLV, and both teams in their second games came out and beat inferior competition, beat them the way that a team like a MAC team or a Big Ten team should beat that type of competition that they were playing against and really put up big numbers on them. I'm curious, you had mentioned both against Illinois and Eastern Illinois that the Bronco defense gave up a lot of points in the first quarter. I think, if I remember right, I think they gave up an average of 12 points in the two games in the first quarter. So I'm curious if, is the defense a weakness that you guys see as a weakness and that's something that the team needs to overcome and really they're just looking to shoot out, get as many points as they can and beat teams with offense and just try to stay in the game with defense? Or are those first quarters, are those just bad showings, you think?
Well, defense was a huge question mark coming into the season. Everyone knew that the Broncos had the high-powered offense, and last year it was the defense, more specifically the run defense, that really let the Broncos down. Teams were able to possess the ball, keep it out of the Bronco offensive hands, and just wear and tear on the defense until just late in the season you saw teams keep away and just put up big numbers. You look at the NIU game from last year, 500 yards of rushing offense, and they just never let the Broncos back into that game come the second half. So this defense so far, they have had iffy first quarters, but the changes that they've made to accommodate the type of offense that they're playing and basically, in other words, shut them down in the second, third, and fourth quarters, it really bodes well. But as for the first quarters, it does kind of concern, especially against if you face a high-powered offense, which Illinois and Marquise Gray, or Minnesota and Marquise Gray, he could, being a dual-threat quarterback, it's just always scary. And so the Toledo game, the NIU game, potentially Minnesota, it could all just be scary when you start in. If a team can put 21 up on a Bronco defense before they can make their changes that they need to, it's just bad news bears for the Bronco offense to try to play catch up.
Sure. Okay. And, you know, one of the questions you asked me, I'm going to be running a piece Thursday afternoon with some Q&A that you and I did. One of the questions that you asked me to answer for your blog was, is Marquise Gray really the whole offense for Minnesota? And, you know, I kind of answered that and said, you know, in a lot of ways he's the key to the offense, but I think there's a lot of other weapons. But I got to tell you, looking at the stat sheets for Western Michigan so far, especially through these first two games, it looks like Alex Carter is the whole offense. So tell us a little bit about that. You know, we've talked a little bit about him so far and the kind of numbers that he can put up. But, I mean, is he really the key to the offense? What are some of the other weapons that they have specifically in the run game? There's some running backs, running back by committee, a single running back that can do some damage as well.
Well, yeah, the running back, I want to say it's running back by committee. You don't see enough to make it to say it is running back by committee or it's a single back. You look at the stat sheet from the EIU game last weekend. Brian Fields had 14 carries. Tevin Drake had 8 carries. Darion Chance had 7 carries. And Antoine Scriven had 8 carries. I mean, that's all for the running backs getting decent carries. Now, some of it is garbage time runs, but Fields had 4.7 yards per carry and Drake had 7.2 yards per carry. Both of them are the main features in the run game. For the run game, though, it really just depends on the run block. It's always been a huge question mark the past couple of years. Because the running backs are talented, they just need a hole to run through, and the O-line has just been kind of shaky on that portion. But as for the offense as a whole, it really does run through Alex Carter. He has some dual threat ability. He's able to lay with his legs if need be. And he has a great arm. The key about him is his decision making. If he makes good decisions, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the nation. He has just good playability, a great arm. But when he just isn't on or he's not making the smartest decisions, you see the games like the Little Caesars Pizza Bowl last year where he had 4 interceptions, 2 fumbles, including one on the potential game-winning drive. And even though the defense can do all they might, if you give a team, any team, good field position, they can take advantage of it. So it really just depends on which Alex Carter shows up. A locked-in, on-fire Alex Carter or a shaky, not confident Alex Carter.
So one more question before we'll kind of wrap it up here, but you've mentioned a couple of times offensive line. It sounds like against Illinois, one of the biggest problems was that Illinois was able to get pressure on Carter and maybe force him to make some bad decisions. You mentioned that there may be some question marks as far as what the offensive line can do in the run blocking game. And I'm wondering is offensive line a problem with the team? Is it seen as maybe a weak spot? If the Gophers, for example, can get through that line and get into the backfield and start to get to Carter and knock him down and maybe get some sacks and some hurries and what have you, it sounds like maybe that can push him into some bad decision-making. Is that the way you kind of see it as well?
Well, the offensive line is fairly experienced. Senior Dan O'Neill, transfer from Michigan, he has a lot of pro potential. He's the second biggest pro prospect on Western behind Alex Carter, and he's one of the better players in America as well. But the rest of the line, they are experienced, and last year they did hold, but something has just fallen off in the last 6 games and then the first 2 of this year where teams have been able to blitz and just able to get pressure on Carter, and it's just able to rattle him. I don't know if everyone's just picked up on this or if one team figured it out and it's just coincidence, but it just seems like pass blocking, if the team blitzes, it just shakes out Carter. As for run blocking, it's the offensive line is just – I really don't know. I don't know where we went wrong. The first 6 games of last year, we were able to run, pass, do everything. And then the last 6 games, we just weren't able to run at all. And then the first 2 games of this year, we really haven't been able to run except for in the second half of the EIU game when that's all we really needed to do. But pass blocking is decent unless there's a blitz. And that's just, I think everyone's picked up on that. EIU was able to get some pressure. Illinois, they have a great front four. Take nothing away from them, but when they brought in other people, it was just horrific to watch as a Bronco fan.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get to the question of the day. What is your prediction for the game? Who do you see winning? What do you see as the difference in the end, and why does one team win or the other?
Well, I think the main focus will be the run game, both Broncos run game and the Minnesota run game. If Minnesota can run the ball, control the game, it really can go their way. If Wesson can get a run game going and open up the passing game, it's going to just scare Gopher fans, because if the offense ever gets rolling, it's almost impossible to stop, just because of the many variables that Western can throw at you. Tight ends, running backs, wide receivers, and then a run game, if it's on, it's just so hard to stop. As for the game itself, I hate to be a homer, but I have to predict Western to win.
I would expect nothing less.
Oh, yeah. Well, coming into the year, we had three BCS games, two on the road at Illinois, at Minnesota, and then we have at UConn. A lot of Bronco fans were either saying 2-2 or 3-1. After the Illinois game, I don't think anyone really diverted away from that. I still think that a lot of Bronco fans are still going with 2-2. I'm sticking to my 3-1 in non-conference. Sorry, I forgot to include EIU in the non-conference as a whole. So that would include a Minnesota win. I do think it might be a little bit close. It's on the road, a ways from home. And Marquise Gray just can do so much that he will probably dominate the Bronco defense early on. But in the end, Alex Carter and the Western Michigan offense is just too much to handle, and I think it's going to go something like 38-28 in favor of the Broncos.
All right. Well, hey, listen, we wouldn't want to have you on the podcast if we weren't expecting you to come in and be a homer and expect your own team to win. So I'm glad to hear that. You've given some great insight on what the Broncos bring to the table. Obviously a lot more than we've been able to see so far from the stat sheet. So really thank you for your time. Really thank you for your insight, and looking forward to the game on Saturday.
I am too. Unfortunately, I might have to watch it on tape delay. I have a wedding to go to.
Oh, that's the worst. You know, I've got a wedding next Saturday. I don't know who these people are that are scheduling weddings on a Saturday in the fall. If there was ever a time to schedule a Friday or a Sunday wedding, football season, college football season is definitely it.
Well, as a Cubs fan, I don't see why the entire summer is a wedding season.
There you go. Very good. Very good. All right. Appreciate your time. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
All right, we'll keep rolling along with the Daily Gopher Football Podcast. Again, do not adjust your speakers. This is J.D. Mill leading the charge this week, as Jeff Rick had a prior engagement that he had to take care of. Thank you to Brandon Fitzsimmons from the various Western Michigan blogs. Thanks for his insight into the game. And as we look ahead to this week, week number three for the Gophers, coming in 2-0, Western Michigan comes into TCF Bank Stadium with a 1-1 record. Chris, they've lost to Illinois, a team that, kind of some mixed reviews so far in the Big Ten, and they really took a Eastern Illinois team out behind the woodshed. Based on, stats you've seen or any highlights or anything like that, give me some initial thoughts on what you think about Western Michigan coming into the bank this weekend.
It's going to sound like a broken record to what everybody's already read probably, but obviously, you know, what's the passing game going to do for Western Michigan? Are they going to be as prolific and effective as I think everybody has just assumed they would be coming in? You know, Illinois shut them down, seemingly, but then, you know, which you know, fit with Illinois possibly having a good defense, but then Illinois' defense got torched by an Arizona State team that's not, you know, a world beater either. So, I'm interested to see just what their offense is all about, if they just struggled one game or if, you know, some of the things that Illinois did disrupted the passing game, and can, you know, the coaching staff find those on film and then get, you know, our players to do the same thing.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of the big number one takeaway. And then I guess related to that, just, you know, how is our secondary going to do? They've looked great in two games overall. You know, can they keep that up?
Right. And, you know, I kind of try to dig into it a little bit with Brandon, and you know, it sounded to me like the difference in the Illinois game was the fact that Illinois was able to get into the backfield and cause disruption for Carter. And I think that that probably plays into our hand pretty well. You know, obviously through two games, you know, we've played against teams with, again, to sound like a broken record, teams that should seemingly have smaller offensive lines than what we're going to face against the Big Ten. But I think that you would probably agree that a MAC team, especially an upper echelon MAC team like Western Michigan, should have a, you know, bigger, better athletes, faster athletes as well. And it sounds like the offensive line could be an issue that's going to play right into our hands. And if Hageman and Wilhite and Emma Flalala, who I'm not sure how to pronounce it either. We probably are. Hopefully he makes us have to learn how to pronounce it. But it sounds like if those guys can really continue the trend that they've started, and if we can get to Carter, that we can really maybe cause him to make some poor decisions. As a whole, you know, this is a game that we're going into where, again, Western Michigan is a MAC team. They're more of an upper echelon MAC team. But let's be real. A Big Ten team should be a MAC team. What kind of advantages do you think that a Big Ten team, I mean, just even just putting Minnesota and Western Michigan aside, what kind of advantages should we typically have against a MAC team going into a game like this?
Well, I mean, you've touched on it. Ideally, you should have better athletes and better players. I know that's not true across the board, especially, I mean, if you look at what killed it at Northern Illinois, you get a kid like a running back, you get the span, you know, you get an undersized but talented running back that everybody else passes on because he's undersized. You know, in that system, he can still do a lot. But ideally, you know, you would think that if you have some better athletes and players up front, either on the offensive or defensive lines, that should allow you to get some either penetration on defense or separation and push on offense. Normally, I'd say home field advantage too, but we all know that TCF Bank Stadium has not always proven to be the most intimidating of locations. Familiarity, too. I mean, when you're a Big Ten school, you play at least one or two MAC schools a year. And if you're a program that's been a winning program and is growing accustomed to beating MAC teams, I think there's probably also just a little bit of a rhythm and familiarity that comes with preparations for that kind of a team. The coaching staff can better prepare for it and know what to help get the kids prepared for. And in those circumstances, ideally it would take a real special MAC team to knock off, you know, most Big Ten teams, even though, you know, as we've seen this season already, that's not exactly true.
Right. Well, and two, on the familiarity piece, I think, obviously, hopefully the advantage of having Coach Kill and Lime Grover and Clays, who have experience in the MAC, they know the coaches, they maybe know some of the tendencies. Hopefully that will that will be an advantage for us as well. Based on what you've seen in the first couple of weeks of the year for the Gophers, do you think that coming into this game, we should have a decided advantage against a MAC team like Western Michigan?
I would love to say yes. I would love to say, hey, we, you know, yes, we struggled against UNLV, but there were some very straightforward corrections that could have, you know, if things had been executed slightly differently, that's not even, you know, a game. You know, we did what we were supposed to against an FCS school, a pretty decent FCS school, and you know, stomped them. I'd love to come in and say, I think there's really just, you know, as long as they execute appropriately, there's nothing that can happen that would result in the Gophers losing. I don't know that that's entirely true. I think if we had a better sense for just how real this defense was, I'd feel pretty comfortable saying that. If we, you know, just everybody executes, no major mistakes, no fluky plays, you know, we'll, you can guarantee that the Gophers will grind out a win. But I don't know that our defense has shown that it is capable of, you know, containing a really prolific offense yet. I hope they are. You know, I hope they're able to do what it takes to disrupt the passing game and shut it down. But as optimistic as I like to be, there's still the part of me that goes, okay, they, you know, we've seen what lesser teams, you know, find ways to tear us apart.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing too that gives me pause heading into this game is this is the type of offense, this is the type of quarterback that the Gophers have traditionally, you know, over the last 3-4 years struggled with. Now, hopefully we're in the process of building a culture here. And when I say we, I obviously mean Coach Kill and his staff, building a culture here in Minnesota where you begin to get over that hump. And again, you know, to not, again, sound like a broken record, if you're going to build a program and try to build something up that had seemingly been torn apart by Tim Brewster in his years, the first thing you have to do is start to learn how to beat the teams that a Big Ten team is supposed to beat. And a Big Ten team is supposed to beat a MAC team. So hopefully the emergence of a pass rush and, you know, even the secondary in seeing Derek Wells and Michael Carter started to step up a little bit last week. hopefully that will be enough for us to be able to contain the Western Michigan offense a little bit. Like you said, you know, there's still some question marks from a defensive standpoint. Based on what we've seen the first two games, you know, obviously a big improvement offensively from game one to game two. What kind of things do you think we can improve on in week three that might help us to be able to, you know, get up on Western Michigan early and hopefully give Marquise and the rest of the team some of that confidence to help us push through?
I'd like to see him establish the running game a little more consistently. Especially, you know, when you're facing a team that's primarily known for being a passing attack, you know, the longer you can keep a high-tempo, you know, big-gaining offense like that off the field, you know, the better off you're going to be. I don't want to see him overly skewed to the run, but it'd be great if, you know, I mean, if this is a run-first offense that Coach Lamgraver likes to run, and it'd just be nice to see them get the extra half yard on every carry and the holes a little more open and the cuts a little better, the vision a little better. All those little things that, you know, we've seen at times but haven't seen all the time, have that come together. Because I think if that happens, you know, it's going to make it a lot easier for Marquise to play action. You know, there's that nice article from Phil Miller, or blog post, whichever it was, this week where he talked about the decision-making on that 75-yard touchdown run. You know, if you get a run game going, you open up more opportunities for Q to make those kind of reads, either as a, you know, a big passing gain or the right kind of read option to break, you know, break free and get some yards. So I think that's the number one thing for me is just a more consistent rushing game across the board, be it from the offensive line or the running backs. Just that, I think, will be huge to really establishing a tone.
Yeah. I'm curious, you know, you mentioned seeing improvements and really good games and spurts from different areas of the team. And, you know, one of my biggest complaints during the Brewster era is that those teams never really had an identity. You never knew week to week what the Gophers could do well that would really overpower their opponents. You didn't know, again, you didn't know what the identity of the team was. It wasn't all, you know, maybe it was going to be a great defensive team one week, a great offensive team another week. I'm curious what your thoughts are. You know, I think we know what Coach Kill wants the identity of this team to be, but based on what we've seen through two games, do you have a sense of what you think the identity of this team is really turning into?
Yeah, I think if it was to reach its full potential, what we'd see is, you know, a team that runs the ball well, but not, you know, not Glenn Mason well. You know, they're not gonna go off for 430 yards. They're gonna deliver a solid, you know, 240, but they're gonna do it on fewer carries. You know, better yards per carry. You're gonna see Gray take advantage of that and either get, you know, I'm not going to try to guesstimate what he would get on the ground himself, because I think that's just going to be so dependent game to game. But, you know, continue to be efficient in the passing game. And I think you'd probably see something like a 65 to 35, you know, run pass. I can really see if they're running the ball well, keeping the ball on the ground a little bit more than they might normally like, just so Gray can, you know, stay efficient. Defensively, I think, identity-wise, it seems to me like the secondary is going to be active. You know, and that's always fun for me. I'd rather see a secondary be active, try to make plays, than the Kevin Cosgrove, let's let him sit 11 yards off the line of scrimmage and give up slant passes all day. you know, that didn't do a lot for me.
No.
So I'm hoping that active defense continues to be an identity. The defensive line, I think, in their spurts has shown exactly what they want their identity to be, and that's just, you know, penetration, get in there, cause havoc. The linebackers, again, I feel like maybe I don't do a good job watching them. I'm not sure. I feel for that should be solid. Don't get beat in pass coverage and be in the right positions to make tackles if stuff's coming your way. So that's, I mean, you know, I think aggressive on the from the front four, you know, with active defenders in the back would be what I would expect and hope to see them set up as an identity on defense, and very run-focused with efficient passing is what I would hope to see on the offensive side.
Absolutely. No, I completely agree. Would you agree that this team right now, as it stands today, is probably closer to realizing its identity on the defensive side of the ball, or excuse me, realizing the identity that Coach Kill wants for this team on the defensive side of the ball more so far than on the offensive side of the ball?
I think so. Coach Clay always talks about being aggressive, and they're definitely being aggressive. I think, you know, their areas of difficulty have come with it. They're not executing, you know, run coverage properly, either by not taking good angles or, you know, not holding assignments on the defensive line, but I think the overall attitude is much different. You know, you just, the way they swarm the quarterback, you talked in the first segment about, you know, all the hits they laid on or hurries they put on to, you know, the two teams we faced. You know, that's not something that, you know, I can't remember the last time we've seen that. And no. it's just fun. And so I think they're definitely a little bit closer. You know, the offense, I think they still haven't totally found their rhythm. They haven't had a game where they've clicked as much as they wanted to. So it's, you know, I definitely think the defense is closer.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for, and you know, funny thing to say, just two games into the season, I'm waiting for a game where the offensive line just clicks. You know, I still feel like the offensive line hasn't quite gotten over that hump of being young. I think they're really talented. I think for the most part, it seems like, it sounds like they understand what is expected of them. But as Coach Kill mentioned, there's just a couple of breakdowns, and I'm really waiting for that game where the offensive line just clicks. It'd be great for that game to happen this week as we head into facing BCS opponents starting next week, to be able to know that that offensive line understands what's expected of them and can actually go out and execute that. So that's kind of the thing. I agree that I think, obviously, you probably got that from how I worded my question. I think the defensive is closer to what this coaching staff expects the identity of the defense to be, and the offense has a little bit of a way to go. And I think what the offensive line can do might be the difference in the offense actually becoming that identity. So that's kind of what I'm looking for. So let's start to wrap it up then. Let's talk about your thoughts on this game. Who do you think wins the game? What's the margin of victory for the Gophers? Because I'm assuming you're going to say the Gophers win. And, you know, what are a couple of areas of the game where you expect the Gophers to stand out that leads you to believe that they're going to win by whatever margin of victory?
Well, you know, it's actually been a nice change of pace, because this is the game I picked this is the game I remember picking in my trap game for the Gophers to lose in our preseason predictions. If I'm wrong and I pick Syracuse, then okay, I look like an idiot. But I'm pretty positive this is the one I picked for them to lose in the non-conference season. I still have a little bit of concern that could happen, but honestly, the optimist in me is worn out, and I do think they keep things moving. You know, I think if indeed what helped Illinois was their pass rush and just disrupting, you know, Western Michigan's passing game, I do think that is going to likely prove to be a decisive factor in favor of the Gophers. I just think they're starting to figure it out on the defensive line. Offensively, you know, I'm looking to see, can they keep being efficient, can Gray keep being efficient? You know, good decisions, not anything flashy necessarily in the passing game, but hitting the open guys and making the right reads. If they do that and the running game contributes, you know, at a moderately successful level, I think they'll be able to hang in even if Western Michigan goes on a hot streak, which I think at some point during the game they are going to be hot. I'm not sold enough on our defense to think we can make this into a lower scoring affair. If I had to pick a score, I'd be more on the lines of, you know, 31-24, 35, 28. I'm thinking a 7-point victory is about what we should expect. I could totally see that being different. I could see it being a 2-touchdown-plus win, but I don't feel comfortable predicting that quite yet.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's about a touchdown game. I think the Gophers find a way to cover the spread. Last, you know, I looked earlier today, I think it was still about 2.5. So basically, home field advantage is all the experts are giving us. But I do agree. I think it's about a touchdown game. I think we probably figure out a way to score, you know, eclipse 30 points again. Because I just, you know, based on what I'm hearing and seeing from the stats, I do think that we should be able to move the ball and score on Western Michigan. And I'm starting to feel like, and again, this is going to be the homer in me, but I'm feeling like the fact that they maybe have some issues at offensive line, maybe I'm reading into that too far, but maybe they have some issues at offensive line. The fact that Illinois was able to get to Carter, and it seems like really messed with his decision-making ability and his ability to really put up big numbers. I'm really starting to feel like maybe that plays into our hands, and I feel like a victory by margin of a touchdown is realistic for this game. So I'm looking forward to it. This will be your first game of the season that you've been in attendance for, correct?
Yes, this is the first time I get to make it up from Madison up to the Twin Cities.
Out of enemy territory and back into the promised land for you. This will be my first game at the bank this year as well, so I'm looking forward to it. You and I have not, this is the first time we've actually spoken, and we'll be able to hopefully meet face-to-face Saturday morning as I crash your tailgate. My tailgating presence is in high demand this weekend, so I'm going to be making a couple of different rounds, but looking forward to sharing some tailgating and some good fall football weather with you. Looking forward to a victory. Thanks so much for joining us. Any last comments before we turn it over to the community to bash us and wish for Jeff Frick to be back?
Just thanks for having me. And everyone be kind. I was not expecting to have to put my voice out on the internet. So.
Well, hopefully they're going to be kind to both of us. Life circumstances notwithstanding, hopefully Jeff Frick will be back next week and I can go back into the role of drinking a lot and sounding like I'm slurring and really let him carry the podcast. But thanks, everybody, for listening. We're looking forward to the game this Saturday. Continue to read us on thedailygopher.com. Continue to listen to the podcast. We'd love to get your feedback. Look forward to seeing everybody out this Saturday and in the comments section. So until then, as Jeff Frick would say, go Gophers, stay classy.